little beads of sweat.
Everybody could take their seats, please. We're going to reconvene. On the original agenda, you'll note that it has MedEd followed by Penelec. What we're going to do is we're going to flip the order of that for the presentation today. We're going to have Penelec speak first. The reason we're going to do that is Penelec and MedEd are combined under the First Energy companies, and our representative from Penelec today is going to give an overview of the First Energy restoration process, and that way they can do that up front, and then we won't have to repeat that again for MedEd. MedEd, our representative, can provide just the individual data related to this storm. So with that, I'll introduce John Ray, the Director of Operations Support for Penelec.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you all very much for holding this event. I think this is a great way for us all to share ideas. And I do appreciate the ability to present for Penelec today and our response to Hurricane Irene. What I'm going to do is quickly cover the First Energy service restoration process. That process, as mentioned before with the other utilities, starts quite a few days before the event. And it's driven mainly by our corporate meteorologist and his reports. And those reports give us a pretty good footprint of what the path of damage is going to be to our facilities. And then from that, we are in touch with our operations individuals in the field to make sure that they're properly prepared for the storm event. Early in the process, we do evaluate the need for mutual assistance and crews, bringing crews into the areas affected. We prepare staging areas if required in order to make sure we have equipment and material ready for those crews. We also communicate with the emergency management agencies and government officials ahead of the storm, especially if it's going to be a large event. And we also implement a comprehensive communication plan with our customers and the media outlets. During and after the storm hits, we hit the field with a lot of damage assessors, hazard responders, and they give us, like the other utilities said, they give us a real good footprint on what the damage is for the storm, help us to really do a lot of planning for that event. And then if hazards are found by those crews, we have them stand by and make it safe until we can get a crew out there to cut the wire in the clear. And also early on in the event, our leadership is also making determinations if crews or equipment are needed in certain areas, especially the significant events. And that's done very early in the process. As far as our priorities, we prioritize our restoration and stage process. The highest priorities are obviously the emergency facilities, the hospitals, fire departments, police departments, and also the 911 facilities, amongst others. There's a long list of priority customers. But next, we make repairs to the highest volume customer, which would be normally the ones affected by our transmission outages. And then we work our way down, obviously, by customer count on tickets as we work our way down. Safety is always our top priority. We do hit the field with a lot of safety representatives to work with our crews to make sure that they have the heightened awareness, they're following procedures and policies. And along with that focus on our own employees and the assisting crews, we do have a very strong focus on public protection also. So that is worked into the plan. And by that, our hazard assessors, as I mentioned before, will stand by down wires and make sure it's safe until a crew can come in and cut it in the clear to make it safe for the public. We do train all of our employees to have a secondary role. So they all do perform a storm role. Many of them are our hazard responders, damage assessors, service restoration, all the entities of the storm are covered. So we do engage all of our employees in that process. Our forestry crews are mostly contractor crews, and we do work them ahead of our line crews to make sure that the area is safe. They clear the debris, the branches, make sure that they have a safe and clear way of getting in and out of the right-of-way. And then also we have safety messages communicated to customers through news releases, paid media, and our First Energy website. During the storm restoration process, we do reach out to emergency management agencies, 911 coordinators in the area. We also increase our staffing levels at our customer contact center. Obviously, we have to prepare them for a large volume of calls, so we do staff up there. We provide outage information through our interactive voice response system, and also our customer service reps and our area managers are very key in communicating with the community leaders when we're going to have a significant event. Next, I'll get into the details of Penelec and how we responded to the event. We did monitor the weather starting on Monday, the 22nd of August. We would get daily, probably twice a day, updates from our meteorologists who would tell us about the storm track and also the damage path and the possible damage we would be sustaining based on the wind speed. By August 25th, we had a very good idea that we were going to be hit in First Energy territory. And also, on August 26th, we made plans to pre-stage our crews for Saturday. At Penelec, we expected to be hit in the Towanda area and also the Lewistown area. So we pre-staged crews in central Pennsylvania and in lower New York to be able to respond to either one of those areas. Those crews were all pre-staged and in locations by 8 p.m. on August 27th. And then on August 28th at 6 a.m., they were all starting work, so they were very handy, very, very close to the areas of damage. We were able to move them up there very quickly. Very early that morning, we realized that the Lewistown area was not going to be affected by the storm, so we moved all the pre-stage crews up into the area. And then we also moved quite a few of our own internal crews that were not affected and from areas not affected by the storm up to the Towanda area that morning. As the storm passed, they were able to travel up to that area and help us out. As far as mutual assistance, other than our own crews that we moved into the area, we did request assistance of 10 two-man crews from our other operating companies, and we received that help from our Cleveland and Monongahela Power operating companies. The storm reached us very early in the morning on August 28th. High winds, heavy rain, obviously hampered our restoration efforts for quite a bit that day. To tell you the truth, the winds did not really significantly die down until around 8 o'clock that night for us. So just like the other utilities mentioned, our assessment and our hazard response was very slow, especially that day, probably into the next day. Our storm disrupted over 61,000 customers, or approximately 10% of our customer base. And for the duration of the storm, we restored 45,000 plus customers within 12 hours of their outage. We processed 701 outage orders and 1,483 trouble orders. Very significant damage in the area. I'm not going to go through the list, but obviously a lot of damage, a lot of down wire that we had to put back up. Very, very treacherous conditions to work in the first few days. And we did mobilize 540 of utility workers. 489 of those were internal to First Energy, and we had 51 contractors. I forgot to mention one of those contractors that we used was a helicopter patrol company. Early the morning on the 28th, we did have one transmission outage. We made arrangements to have a helicopter come in and patrol that line, and we knew they wouldn't be able to fly till Monday. And while we had them there, and we do this quite often when we have both transmission and distribution damage, we had them fly the majority of the distribution lines in the area to really give us a head start on the damage assessment for the area. And also we brought in 50 forestry contractors to help out our line crews. As far as outreach to mutual assistance crews, we did not make a request for mutual assistance crews outside of First Energy, and that was based on our customer count and available crews from within Penelec. We did, like I mentioned before, we did receive 10 two-man crews for our sister companies. As far as impediments to the service restoration efforts, obviously we contend with a lot of downed trees, considerable debris, flooding, a lot of closed roads. The timing of the storm and our pre-staging, you would normally, as they mentioned before, you would normally want to get a jump on the storm because you have people there ready to jump on it, and the storm hit us first thing in the morning, so the timing was perfect, but due to the conditions that lasted throughout that day, it did hamper our restoration. We dealt with difficult terrain and off-road damage that also hampered our service restoration. In that area, we do have areas of intermittent communications with either cell phone or our radio coverage. Especially with our external crews that came in, we had to deal with those situations where you have to go till you get a signal. And when we deal with those on a daily basis, we report those issues back to our dispatch office to record that so our communications people can follow through and see if we can get some better coverage. And then also, we had a shortage of local hotel rooms. That area is it's very much inundated with the gas drilling companies, and there aren't that many hotels to begin with. So our hotel rooms were an hour and a half to 2 hours away from the areas where our crews were working. So that also increased our restoration time. Next graph is just a storm graph of our restoration times. On the left-hand side is the customers out, and the bottom line is the horizontal line. It's the date and time of the outages. You can see it ramps up very quickly the first day, the 28th. It did last a majority of that day, but we did see damage throughout the period that we were calling the storm. So we did have outages continue on through that week. The black line is that outage line. The orange line is the restoration line, and I'll go through the blue line on the next slide. The blue line is actually the restoration times, and you can see the storm ramped up through the morning, lasted throughout the day, and it fluctuated quite a bit that day as we received damage. And then after the evening of the 28th, we were able to restore customers on a steady basis. We did have a few storms pass through our territory after that storm, and that's the blips you see or the rises you see in that graph. As far as our communications outreach, we did implement, as I mentioned before, a comprehensive communication strategy, where we could update our customers on how we were able to respond to the event, also to provide safety tips for them for the event, and also so we can answer the media calls that would come in. And at CrossFirst Energy, we produced 14 news releases and 10 media advisories, and those were distributed to some 2,600 media outlets across our territory. We did also have a Hurricane Irene site on our website so customers can go in and see what the process was or progress was on our restoration. We had an advertising outreach aligned with our service restoration efforts, and we also finished the storm out with a campaign of thank you ads. We thanked all of our customers for their patience during our restoration efforts. Our contact center, this is a Pennsylvania contact center, the numbers, so that would cover both Penelec and MedEd. Obviously, a large volume of calls that they processed. Obviously, staffing them up was required, and they did a great job handling that call volume. As far as what went well, we had very good safety results under very difficult conditions, and that's a tribute to our workforce, the skill, focus, and attention that they provide for us. We also had successful implementation of our storm process, especially isolate and make safe process, and that's internally we call that cut and run. But what it really is when you have a hazard responder or damage assessor that's down looking at a down wire and they have to make it safe, we need to get a crew there to come out, cut it in the clear, make it safe, restore as many customers as we can up to that point, and then move that crew on. And that's very important for us to continue with that damage assessment, to keep those people moving throughout the event, because that damage assessment is key in making those plans to have a successful storm restoration. We also provided updates to the PUC staff working in the state EOC, and that was mainly handled by our corporate regulatory reporting staff. The helicopter inspection that I mentioned before was vital to us. It did give us a very early look at the footprint of the storm and the damage we had. We were able to actually create packages very quickly with that, a lot faster than you would be if you were hiking those lines. And finally, we partnered with the Susquehanna County EMA and American Red Cross to provide ice to the affected areas, and that was done on the 30th. As far as lessons learned or things we can do better, I think it's a common theme. I think even though we do have a good communication plan, it could always be better. It needs to be more consistent, more accurate, probably give better ETRs. We also need to look at a lesson we learned from our friends at MedEd. We put a significant burden on our area manager in that area. She was really had a lot to do as far as reaching out to local officials, EMA agencies, and that. So we really need to look at in the future sending other area managers up to areas affected to make sure that they can lighten that burden. We also need to consider other social media presence, such as Twitter, Facebook. We need to get in tune with the times, and so we're looking at that. We need to create a more user-friendly mobile version of our outage website. Our outage website is very good, but when you get it on your BlackBerry or your mobile device, it's hard to see the details, so we're working on that. And then finally, we need to look at alternative lodging arrangements. We do look at trailers that you can bring in with bedding in them, also bunk beds in our line shops, because it is a reality up there, and we knew that going in. We were able to deal with it this time, but it did affect us as far as timing. But in the future, we might need to look at bringing that in to make sure our restorations are handled a lot more quickly. That's the end of my presentation. Again, I thank you very much, and I'll turn it back over to Darren. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Just quickly, apologize for not giving the brief backdrop on Penelec. Penelec does serve, for those of you who don't know, Penelec service territory. It serves basically the northern part of the state from the eastern to the western borders. They are also interspersed with the rural electrics up in that service territory. Next, we turn to the Med-Ed companies. The Med-Ed companies serve primarily around this area in the York area. They also serve a bit of a disjointed service territory up in the Lebanon area. And they also reach up into the Poconos area in the Stroudsburg area. So with that, I will bring Nick Austin, the Director of Operations Services of MedEd, to come up and give a briefing on MedEd.
Thank you, Darren, and thank you to the commissioners for allowing us the opportunity to come and speak with you today. Many of the points in our presentation that you're going to hear are similar to the other utilities. We experienced a lot of the same challenges that they experienced. We also experienced a lot of the same victories or issues that we handled well that they experienced. That being said, what I'd like to do is sort of walk you through our timeline. Monday and Tuesday, the 22nd, 23rd, we began monitoring the weather just like everybody else. At that time, the hurricane was sort of in a wobbly pattern. Predicted to hit Florida with a chance to ride up the coast. By the 24th, we started to get a bit of a firmer forecast with that hurricane expected to ride the coast. Its center being off coast, and there were, depending on the paths that you saw, it would either ride the coast directly or be anywhere upwards of 100 miles off coast. Despite all the weather forecasts, we decided to implement our planning activity very similar to what John Ray discussed with you. By the 25th, we had several conference calls, and we began all of our pre-planning efforts. Everything from making sure we had staging areas to confirming our inventory and material, ordering poles, cross arms, and the like. By the 26th, again, the storm was starting to firm up. We knew we were going to get high winds in the eastern portion of our territory. Our territory spans west to east, southwest Gettysburg type of area, northeast, eastern Stroudsburg, Dingman's area. Given our territory, we were expecting some pretty significant weather, Reading and east, and we knew that there was still a chance that our service territory was going to get hit west of Reading. Given that, we participated in numerous conference calls. We started making requests of our First Energy sister companies for crews. We took the action to book over 300 hotel rooms, Reading and East, mostly in the eastern Stroudsburg area, fearing that the citizens of New Jersey were going to leave New Jersey because the storm was bearing down on them. Our thought process was get the hotel rooms before they did. And so for the first night of the storm in that area, we had hotel rooms we had secured, we were paying for, not necessarily anybody sitting in. And then we implemented a crew staging area in Easton. The 27th, again, forecast starting to firm up a little bit more. We knew we were going to get walloped. Definitely Reading and East, and they were talking of max wind gusts in the York, the Hanover, the Lebanon service territories, of upwards of 40 miles an hour. By that point in time, on Saturday the 27th, we had secured over 100 people from our First Energy sister companies. We had set up another crew staging area outside of Reading, and we had scheduled a work schedule for our linemen such that we had round-the-clock coverage. We were going to have roughly three-quarters of our line crews working daylight hours, 16 hours a day, and then about a quarter working in the evening, so that at no point did we experience a flat or lull in our restoration efforts. 10 o'clock, storm began to hit. On the 28th, we conducted a conference call at 0500, and at that point, we were in the thick of it. We had a little over 60,000 customers out at 0500, and we were working with our staff to ensure that crews were where we planned them to be, material was where we wanted it to be, and at that point, the plan was working very well. We had increased our staff in all the line shops. Sunday was, I guess, with the exception of the storm, 100% participation by all MedEd employees and 100-plus First Energy employees coming in from other areas in the company. We also, at that point in time, midday, we recognized that the storm had hit us far harder than we had anticipated in the York area, with significant winds, sustained winds, well north of 40 miles an hour. So we also opened up a crew staging area in York. By Sunday afternoon, we had secured an additional 300 resources from our sister companies, First Energy. There is a benefit to First Energy's size, and that's in that we had crews from Cleveland, Toledo, West Virginia, Akron area, for example. In talking with our employees after the storm, and we have employees with 30, 40 years of experience, this was the worst storm that they ever experienced. It's the worst storm in memory, and it bears out in the numbers. From a straight weather standpoint, the winds in our eastern half of our territory, Reading and East, were well in excess of 45, 50 miles an hour with gusts in the mid to high 50s. In the west service territory, sustained wind gust of 40 miles an hour, which was, again, a little bit different than we were forecasting. Gusts of 40 is what we would all experience in a typical spring storm. 12 to 18 hours of 40-mile-an-hour winds is going to beat your system up pretty good. Over 224,000 customers affected, 41% of our total customer base. We had... out of those customers affected, a little over 129,000 experienced an outage of 12 hours or less. And another 9,300 on top of that experienced an outage of less than 48 hours. We had roughly 2,258 outage orders, meaning a situation where customers were out. Over 2,200 work orders. You could have more than one work order for an outage order. You could have a forestry crew, you could have a line crew, you could have a service crew. And over 6,800 trouble locations. Trouble call could potentially be our assets in the field, could potentially not be. It could be cable TV, somebody's calling us and saying your wire's down in my front yard. We had 25 transmission events, and 13 of those were lockouts, 11 on the 69 kV system, 2 on the 115 system. You see here just our way of trying to calculate the storm in numbers. Over 18 miles of wire, 143 poles, over 200 cross arms, 130 transformers. We asked our engineering department to try to put some meaning to that. And over the course of 7 days, we rebuilt an entire electrical system the size of a small borough in Pennsylvania, Littlestown, Boyertown type of town. We mobilized nearly 1,800 utility workers. We had over 660 MedEd workers working 16 hours a day for over a week, 600-plus First Energy employees, and you see the numbers there of our mutual assistance utilities and our line of forestry contractors. We were in constant contact with MAMA and SEE. Through our corporate representatives, And as you saw, given the number of crews we had just with our sister companies, we were confident we had the right crewing. We had it when we needed it, and we had it where we needed it. The 123 mutual assistance workers from the other utilities were a huge asset to us, and we appreciated their participation in the event. Our impediments to restoration were the same that you've heard thus far today. A lot of water, a lot of trees, a lot of roads washed out. Several of our circuits were so damaged that we instituted a process that we often don't use in the first energy companies, and that was to quarantine them. And what that means is instead of dedicating line resources to those circuits, leaving, having people call, go back and dedicate line resources, we dedicated engineering professionals. And much like PP&L had discussed with you earlier today, just had them walk the circuit, put work packages together, so that we had our arms around the damage that was done on that circuit, and we could best utilize our line crews and our linemen when they went into that area. They knew what they were getting themselves into, if you will. Like John Ray showed you, we also have a storm restoration chart. You know, as an operations director, you want to see that black line and that blue line separate as soon as possible during a storm. And what that's pretty much telling you is that you're restoring customers quickly. This is a large part of our isolate and make safe work. After the first day, we had restored close to 61% of our customers. After day two, it was right around 75%. We're proud of our efforts in that respect. Again, like John Ray showed you, this is the blue line. You'll note just a couple little blips at the end of that. Those are two different 5,000 customer outages. So just because a hurricane hit doesn't mean you're not going to experience the same things that you experience on a week-over-week, month-over-month basis. So on top of hurricane restoration efforts, you still have to conduct business as normal, as close to normal as possible. John covered most of the communication outreach. What I'd like to just talk about real quickly is our expansion of our external affairs staff. These are our men and women who talk to community leaders. They talk to government affairs people. What we did unique to this storm, and I don't believe we've ever done it before, we consider it a best practice going forward that we're going to share with the other First Energy companies is we greatly increased the amount of those people on our property. The people that were new on the MedEd property, we had sitting at desks answering phone calls from mayors, from councilmen, from business leaders. The people that were from MedEd, we put them out in the field to actually address people in the field as to what was going on, restoration efforts, estimated time of restoration, things like that. You saw the numbers for John Ray there from a communications to customer standpoint. Another thing that we were proud that we did, first time doing it in a long time, was we sent out over 500 emails several days ahead of the storm to our large and industrial customers, giving them not only information on who to call with respect to outages, but if they didn't get through for whatever reason, we handed out cell phone numbers, pager numbers. That was very well received by those customers, and several of them utilized that information. Pardon me, during the course of the storm. What went well at MedEd? Like Penelec, we worked safe. We kept our employees safe. We kept our contractors and mutual assistance utilities safe. We kept members of the public safe. We're very, very proud of that effort. We believe we put together a pretty good plan. It wasn't a perfect plan. No plan is when a hurricane hits you. But it was adaptable enough that we could move crews where we needed them, when we needed them. And we restored our customers in the manner in which we thought we would restore them prior to the event. We talked a little bit about the crews being staggered around the clock. That worked very well. Excellent cooperation from our external mutual assistance crews. I can't thank them enough. The helicopter patrols, much like Penelec, we utilized helicopter patrols, but in the Dingman's portion of our service territory, we could not gain access due to flooding. And as a result, we utilized that helicopter to patrol distribution circuits. It's not very common. We actually put a line manager in the helicopter who flew his own circuits and was able to report back what he saw generally. And that gave us a pretty good idea, gave us a plan so when those waters receded, we could send crews in. And it wasn't sort of a, a hunting exhibit. It was more of a let's do the work that we knew we were going to do. And then again, the isolate, make safe process. We believe in that. Lessons learned, much like everybody else, it all focuses on communication. We struggle, admittedly, with the pull and tug between 100% accurate communication and quick communication. And that's difficult. And I think sometimes we may err on the side of 100% accurate information when really people just want a pretty good idea of what's going on out there. And so I think that we can do a better job in getting them accurate information quicker. And we can do that through things like social media. Twitter, iPads, iPhones, those aren't going away. And we need to adapt to that technology. The doubling of the workforce created some unique operational issues. You saw we had well over 1,000 people on a property. I think the number was close to 1,800. And we had, generally speaking, we have about 650, 690 employees. When you double or increase your workforce by a factor of 2.5, you're going to either run out of things or run out of people you don't normally run out of. Just a very quick example is our storm process and our manual of operations and our safety manual requires somebody to be first energy trained anytime a device in the field is going to be operated. It's to be able to hold a clearance control. We had so many people on the property that when we started getting into restoration, we had to make sure that there was one person trained in the manual of ops attached to any crew that was going to operate a device. And as we got through the storm, we recognized those people were a rare commodity. So the good news is we hope that we don't have a hurricane anytime again soon. And if we do, we'll be sure to keep an eye on that type of qualification when we're anticipating bringing that many people on the property. And then, as John indicated, a more user-friendly mobile version of our website. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you today. And that'll conclude MedEd's portion.
Thank you, Nick. We next turn to PECO Energy Company. PECO Energy Company serves not only the city of Philadelphia, but the surrounding counties such as Delaware, Chester, Montgomery, and Bucks County. To represent and discuss PECO today, we have Mike Innocenzo, the Vice President of Distribution System Operations. Mike.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, Commissioners. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about our storm restoration effort. As pretty much as everyone mentioned here, this was a monumental effort, historic storm for us. We'll talk a little bit about similar to the my colleagues here. We did a little bit of the week prior to hoping it would go out to sea. By midweek, we realized our hopes weren't going to come true and we were going to need to be prepared for this. We started our pre-event planning on Wednesday, about 3 days prior. We opened up our emergency response centers on Thursday and Friday to do our preparation. Some of the similar activities we arranged for round-the-clock staffing. We have a little under 2,500 employees within PECO. Everyone, whether you're actually putting wire back up or supporting the effort in some way, shape, or form, had a role during this storm. And all of that staffing was prearranged. We did similar where we had to cancel vacations, but great response from our employees. They knew that this was showtime and very proud of their response. We also, because this was going to be such a monumental storm on the East Coast, we started securing additional resources by Wednesday evening, Thursday morning. Although we have a very good sharing relationship with the mutual assistance on the East Coast, we were all dealing with the same issues, so there were really no resources on the East Coast, and we had to start pulling folks from the Midwest. We brought in about 1,500 additional personnel for assistance in restoration and tree trimming, just under 600 contractors. They came from as far away as Florida and Michigan and Illinois. We got them rolling on Thursday. From the MAMA group, Mid-Atlantic Mutual Assistance, we got some support for 53 personnel. We have a similar relationship with our sister utility out in Illinois, Commonwealth Edison. They supplied us with 161 personnel. In addition to some of those numbers that you see in the contractors and the vegetation management crews were resident contractors that support Commonwealth Edison. So We got a lot of support from our sister utility in Illinois. All of those folks were rolling and on the ground by Saturday. So by Saturday, we had them in. They were briefed, had all their equipment. We're bedded down for Saturday evening. So when Sunday morning came around, they were ready to roll and ready to start putting lights back on. We did extensive communications as well, media interviews, briefings throughout the several days. We focused a lot on the need for the telling our customers that we did expect this to be a big event. We needed them to expect several days of power outages to be prepared for that. Also expected a lot of wires down and a lot of safety messages for the public. A lot of briefings with our elected officials, regulatory officials, several communications with Dan over the several days prior to the event, letting them know what we were doing and getting ready for that. Outreach with our 911 centers. We also arranged for staffing in the 911 center. Similarly, we found that's a good practice for us. So throughout the course of the event, we had someone in each of our county locations in addition to the Philadelphia, City of Philadelphia Emergency Office. Some of the issues were ones that others have talked about. Flooding, which was made it difficult for us to access some of the locations. In addition to that, with our gas system, we had about 1,000 gas customers that were interrupted for this event. So we had, that created another resource constraint from us. Normally in storms, our gas employees help out with working with some of our contract crews. We weren't able to do that for this event because we had another battle to fight there. The high winds resulting in downed trees, road closures, which was another challenge both in getting access to and also became another priority, a very high priority for some of our municipalities. And also by Saturday evening, and we had pre-staged this, we knew this was going to occur, so we had done a lot of preparation for our crews. When the tornado warnings hit, we actually stood down our crews. So from about 10 o'clock on Saturday evening to the morning hours of Sunday morning, it was not safe for us to operate, so we had our crews stand down. The storm, by customer count, it was our third largest ever. By the number of trouble locations, it was our second largest ever. And by the amount of damage, you know, our statistics are a little bit different there, but it was probably close to our largest. If you look at some of the numbers there, 1,500 crossarms, 11,000 fuses, 5,000 insulators, over 300 poles, 300 transformers, and 90 miles of wire and cable, which is the next closest one that we can come up with was a large event back in the summer of 2006. We had to replace about 24 miles of wire and cable, so this looks to be our largest in terms of the damage. We responded to more than 3,000 police and fire wire down jobs and cleared more than 100 roads during the storm. Here's our customer counts. Again, at 500,000 customers, we service 1.6 million electric customers and 400,000 gas customers. So roughly about a little less than a third of our customers without power at some point in time during the days of the event, which would make it our third largest by customer count. Our restoration strategy is similar. With something of this magnitude, we really had to build the backbone of the system back up. So before we could prioritize, you know, we had to get a feed in the area, so we had to restore service to substations. We had a similar approach where we would take 20, 30 crews out with several supervisors and have them stationed at subcenters and rebuild from there out. After that, we did switching to reroute as customers, a similar cut-and-run strategy. Again, we share a lot of best practices with my colleagues on the panel here. We then focus on the power to critical care customers, which is hospitals, healthcare services, police and fire stations, water, sewer, public water, public sewer. We also do a lot of communication with our 911 centers to understand where there are emergency facilities, shelters, emergency shelters, and giving those high priority. And then we then work down the list similar. We work by trying to focus on the high customer count. And we get and then start to get at the last couple days of the storm, you get into the smaller neighborhoods and those smaller pockets. We were really pleased with our restoration timeline, as you see some of the numbers up there. This is the restored within 24 hours. We had about 80%. We had about 90% by 36 hours and about 99% within 72 hours. So by Wednesday evening, we were down to about the last 5,000 customers, and it was a slugfest over the next couple of days to get those last 5,000 on, but we were really dealing with sort of the few customers and not the massive numbers by Wednesday evening. Communication and outreach, I'll try not to be too repetitive. We did a lot of them to the customers, a lot of what was similar. For our the ETRs, we did also have to suspend it we suspended it Saturday evening and till Monday morning. The storm left our system Sunday evening. We spent Sunday night assessing our numbers, and by Monday morning, we put our best estimates of ETRs on there by Monday morning. That also became our work plan, so we worked to the ETR. So if we told you we were going to be on by Monday night, we wanted to make sure we had a crew on it. If we told you we were going to be on by Tuesday, we wanted to make sure we had a crew on it on Tuesday. And that became our work plan. By Wednesday night, when we were down to that couple thousand customers, we were doing proactive outreach to those customers. So if we weren't going to have you on by Wednesday night, we were making proactive calls and let you know, hey, we still think you might be another day or two. Here's what your estimated restoration time is. And we continue to monitor outages through the 911 centers. Conducted media interviews throughout the event. A lot of outreach to the elected officials and regulatory officials, local officials and emergency responders. And as you heard many of our colleagues talk about, the employee communications were also really important. So when times are at their worst, there's a lot of flooding. When a lot of folks are hunkered down in their homes, that's when we're asking a lot of our employees to leave their homes. So most of our employees left their homes without power or left their homes with flooded basements to come and to work to restore power for our customers. So giving good communications to our employees to let them know where the restoration status is, how they were performing, built up a lot of esprit de corps. They were really proud of their accomplishments, and those employee communications were critical for that. Some of the successes. Safety, we did not have any major events. We did have two bee stings. We had one muscle strain an event of this size, which was pretty good. So we're pleased with the safety performance. The utilization of the established hurricane plan over the years, as we've had storms and major events, we've continued to learn. We've continued to build that into our processes and procedures. So those couple of days prior to the event, we were actually pulling out our procedures and executing on those for the planning. Just to highlight the value of these types of events, our process and procedures, similar to those on the panel, have really grown over the past couple of years because of sharing best practices and also sharing feedback. So getting feedback from our customers, getting feedback from the municipal officials, we've been able to build that into a lot of our process and procedures. And a lot of the ones that we thought were very successful in this event, you could draw a direct line to a previous storm or event where we got feedback on that, and that worked well. Staging the crews was huge. So the fact that we had over 250 crews on the ground ready to go by Sunday morning really helped us get out of the gate cleanly, and we talked about the communications to the customers. One that I don't have up there was also our use of our AMR system. We were also able to ping the outages that we had out there. We estimated over 2,000 outages we were able to cancel because we had assessed that the lights were back on. What that did is that either prevented unnecessary phone calls or worse, prevented an unnecessary truck roll. And we think that brought in the tail of our storm. We had most of our customers back on by Friday. We tracked our last outage on Saturday, and we think we were able to bring that in because of the AMR success. Opportunities for improvement, the road closures. Again, although we had processes for that in place, it's something that was an opportunity for improvement, particularly around coordination with all of the local officials on prioritization. So we try to coordinate a lot of our priorities through the county 911 centers, but obviously, you start getting into road closures, it becomes a municipal issue, and trying to make sure we coordinate the priorities for that and do a tighter job on our part around communications. One of the things, even a simple thing of letting them know, not so much when we were going to get out on it, but when that job was even complete, and we can get a little tighter on that. Customer communications, although we put a lot of efforts on that, I think that's the constant theme. We also had our overflow IVR system. We had several hours on Sunday morning when that went out. That's a third-party vendor that we work with. They actually provide services to about 35 other utilities. They had a problem on their system early Sunday. That created some issues for that. We're working with the vendor for some lessons learned and to help make sure that that does not occur again. And then some issues around truck permitting for foreign crews. We got great support from Dan and Darren and here in Pennsylvania, but when you start bringing crews from Michigan and elsewhere, we found that we need to do some tighter processes around getting the appropriate permitting to get them in town. So with that, I'll turn it over to Darren.
Thank you, Mike. Our final utility presentation comes from UGI Utilities. General perspective on UGI, we're their service territory generally around the Wilkes-Barre area, surrounded very much by the PPL service territory. To speak to UGI's storm response today, Bob Stoiko, the Vice President of the Electric Division. Bob.
Thank you, Darren. Commissioners, other attendees, thank you. Darren took some information from my first slide already, but we are the smallest electric entity that will be presenting today. We have 62,000, just over 62,000 customers within our 400-square-mile service territory. We operate about 1,990 miles of distribution line, 132 miles of transmission line to serve our customers. And our territory, as you can see by its location, it is outside of Wilkes-Barre, but primarily rural area, wooded area, and some of the suburbs around Wilkes-Barre. First of all, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our history of reliability within the state of Pennsylvania. These are PUC tracked statistics on most recent year and three-year averages on our KD and safety performance relative to our standard and benchmark targets. And we're very proud of our long history of providing reliable service. With that said, we certainly had our challenges with this particular storm. You've already heard from a regional perspective and from a national perspective, this was a huge storm, impacted millions of Americans. And every electric utility from North Carolina to Maine experienced some difficulties in restoring power to customers. As you also heard from the other presenters, it made it difficult for us to access our normal mutual aid resources due to the scope of the storm. The information provided here is a comparison of Hurricane Irene to the two largest storms that we've ever faced in our history. And essentially, just a couple statistics. We did have storm damage that affected approximately 40% of our transmission and substation infrastructure, so that clearly generated a lot of outages right out of the gates. About 36,000 customers, 58% of our total customer base, experienced an outage due to Irene. And although the absolute numbers compared to some of my larger brethren here may not seem as impressive, on a relative basis, you can see almost every measure that you look at, we were looking at a storm that generated 4 to 8 times the amount of damage compared to anything that we had ever experienced in our history. And this includes even going back to Hurricane Agnes in 1972. From a restoration perspective, we were able to restore approximately 50% of our customers in less than 2 days and 95% within 5 days. Here's a map of our service territory, and this is showing calls from customers that were reporting damage. This is not outage calls. This is actually calls involving damage. Frankly, if we added the outage calls to this map, it would essentially cover our entire service territory in colored dots. And there's really no one area where it's concentrated. Really, any difference between the density of dots is around our customer density within the territory. Just a couple pictures of most interest to me. The one on the far right is actually my driveway. So you can see just from some of the photos, the rural nature and the wooded nature. Oop, whoa. Rural nature of the territory. This thing's jumping on me now. Just a quick rundown on planning, very similar to some of our counterparts. We did start to assess weather forecasts back on the 23rd. We did review our options relative to adding resources from our line contractor and our participation in the Mid-Atlantic Mutual Assistance Group, MAMA, starting on the 23rd. And as you heard, resource availability was limited. Pretty much by the 26th, we had our major pre-storm planning meeting where we laid out all of our plans, invoked our emergency plan, and reached out to the local emergency management groups. And then we had inventory review and staging. From a prioritization perspective, not a significant difference from my counterparts here. One thing that's difficult to show or see on this slide, this is actually displaying in the red lines our transmission system. The red circles were our areas, actually substations that were out of power, and the red with yellow were the actual transmission lines that were damaged. And as I said, it affected about 40% of our system in that darker gray area. The northeastern portion of our territory was at one point 100% of our customers were out of power in those areas. It's about 24,000 of our customers. This is our service restoration timeline. You've heard others mention, and actually from the beginning, an incredible effort from our field forces. As many of the other companies, we were running 16-hour shifts, working around the clock to bring customers back on, basically just having those 8-hour breaks to, you know, for safety reasons. Unfortunately, due to the rural nature of our service territory and the extraordinary amount of damage, it took us longer than we'd hoped to bring all of our customers back in service. UGI used a wide array of communication tools to inform and interact with our customers. We reached out to traditional print and broadcast media by providing multiple public service announcements or news releases on a daily basis. These news releases provided safety information, updates on restoration efforts, including locations where daily repair work was planned, and information on the location of shelters and supplies available to help affected customers. We also posted these news releases on the UGI website, as well as providing it to our internal staff, including our call center. We also used social media, principally on our Facebook page, as a further location where customers could look to receive regular updates and actually communicate with us on Facebook as well. In addition, we conducted a public meeting at the Lake Lehman Junior Senior High School for customers still without power a few days after the storm had left the territory. Over 100 customers were in attendance at that public meeting. Members of my staff and I presented information on storm restoration status, answered any questions customers had, and collected updated data on each customer's outage status. So based on information that we collected and, frankly, customer suggestions, UGI began posting updated copies of all PSAs daily at the Lake Lehman School, so the customers did not have access to any of the other communication techniques and media that we were providing. At least they had a place to see the updates. In addition, UGI did make supplemental donations to various nonprofit agencies throughout our service territories, such as the Red Cross and Salvation Army, to ensure the supplies and resources were available to the communities we serve and the customers affected by the storm. And with all that said, we certainly thank our customers for their patience in dealing with what was a very difficult set of circumstances. And all of us at UGI are sorry for the terrible inconvenience that this storm created for our customers. We know that restoration efforts took a long time for a certain group of customers, and that's why we're working so hard to restore power throughout that process and looking at lessons learned. On to lessons learned, some of the positives. You know, certainly we learned a lot given the historic nature of this storm. And we're very proud of our field forces who worked long hours to bring our customers back into power. from a field resource perspective, for the resources we had, we think we had solid planning, effective scheduling, and by staging pole setting crews, tree trimming crews, and line repair crews, very effectively worked our way through the damaged areas. We also had, which we didn't have back in the 2008 storm, laptop computers in the field with outage and mapping data. So it definitely provided additional information for our field crews. And finally, face-to-face customer meetings with our customers certainly helped us address individual customer needs for those that were affected. However, there are certainly things that we learned for future use. We are still in an evaluation mode, looking at our resource and response techniques, the communication approaches, information management systems, and operations protocols. And we've already made some adjustments to a number of aspects to our response plans. First of all, the purchase and installation of an already budgeted enhanced outage management system will help us significantly improve our planning and communications when faced with a storm of this magnitude in the future. We're in the early stages of assessing vendors and system functionality with the goal to begin the purchase and installation of the system by the end of this fiscal year. We also plan to explore the availability of more robust weather forecasting tools, which will be used to supplement our emergency management planning along with the outage management system. We've already started to refine our planning and emergency resource base associated with the deployment of contractor resources. We have initiated the process of joining the PA Rural Electric Association's Mutual Assistance Organization. In fact, their agreement is with our legal folks as we speak, so we hope to have that signed in the next few days. Clearly, although our MAMA membership is beneficial to us in a storm of this type, we definitely suffered by not having other resources to go after. We're also hosting a fall meeting of MAMA to review lessons learned from the Hurricane Irene experiences. We've expanded our review of communications channels, like some of our counterparts, as much as we thought we were doing a great job. Clearly, we were not as effective as we'd hoped to be. We've recently enlisted the services of an international consumer communications firm to assess the feasibility of developing an app for smartphones, which could be used to update customers on outage restoration and related information. We also learned that outreach initiatives need to begin sooner in the restoration cycle to improve information flow and receive more personal information on customer questions and concerns. As part of that expanded effort for storms of this type in the future, we plan to have an information center available to all customers when storms impact our region of this size. This central information center, again, a physical location, would be manned by company personnel and would provide up-to-date information on outage restoration efforts, as well as information on services available to our customers. With the lessons learned from this unprecedented storm, UGI is taking the steps necessary to assure that customer restoration performance and related customer communications will be significantly improved if and when a storm of this magnitude occurs again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. I'd like to thank the presenter, Dan, from from the commission, Terry from the association, and all our presenters from the industry for their discussion today. What we'd like to do now is I'm going to transition over to Dan, and we're going to open up a panel Q&A session with the commissioners, their staff, and with Dan and myself before we open it up to audience comment. So first on our panel Q&A, I'd like to ask the commissioners if they have any questions for the panel. Start with Chairman.
Couple takeaways. One is a question for the panel. How important was the AMR technology? You recognize, under Act 129, we're going to be deploying smart meters here in Pennsylvania. I'd like to think on a very slow glide path to get them in, except for PICO. I know we're working until the 2015 deployment. But not everybody has AMR technology in their footprint. So how important to PPL, PICO, was it to your restoration efforts? I mean, was it On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank it?
Yeah, I'll start, Carl, and jump in. I would say for us it was, it was up in that 10 range.
Okay.
Extremely helpful in terms of a couple of areas. One, in terms for a storm of this magnitude, in terms of letting us know where the outages were, you know, we knew that damage it wasn't. But on the back end, we used the technology to ping each of the meters on the back end, and those last couple of days when you're trying to get those last few thousand customers on, anytime you can not waste a truck roll is really critical. And we had about 2,000 of those that we were able to cancel and avoid sending a wasted truck roll out there. So very, very important for us.
Answer would be very similar. The AMR technology isn't to the point that you get the outage information up front. They just don't work that way. But it's the same advantage that Mike mentioned, is not having to roll a truck. In the company that I came from, we would always have to phone people. And you couldn't do that from 2300 to 07 in the morning. You didn't want to be calling people at night. So with the AMR, you can do a lot of that pinging in the middle of the night. So I would say at the end of the storm, it's that's where you see the benefits.
Okay. The other question I have for representatives from FirstEnergy, it's you kind of have the tale of two different states, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. As I understand, in New Jersey, your electric distribution company over there, you were kind of on the eastern or western end of the state where they had tremendous amount of flooding, so it was very difficult for you to get crews out. Maybe talk a little bit about the differences between what you experienced in New Jersey and what you experienced here in Pennsylvania. Or were they similar?
I think they were very similar. I think Jersey was hit harder. I think the probably the heavier rains and the heavier winds were in the Jersey area, but I think it was very similar. As a FirstEnergy company, we're looking at the whole territory of our company. To tell you the truth, when Pemex started moving crews on the 27th, I was actually hoping we weren't going to get hit because I was going to move my crews to the east had we not been hit. So we look at how the storm's going to hit. We look at the areas are going to be hit. We look at the amount of damage that we might get, and we make plans accordingly. I think Jersey was hit probably a little bit heavier, like I said. And our focus was on cleaning up Pennsylvania. And if we got that done quickly enough, we would move those crews over to New Jersey. And that's what we did.
I'm going to come back to UGI. And one of the things we're hearing anecdotally is this issue of accessing support to crews to get out in the field. And you guys had a situation, and I'll kind of say it maybe there was some miscommunication, but you guys had an opportunity. You had an immediate need to have 8 line crews out in the field, and you had a situation where you were called upon to make a decision, and between the field operation and the corporate entity making that decision caused you tremendous heartburn because you lost the ability to get, and I think at the end of the day it was 16 crews out in the field, and that crew had already moved east into New Jersey. Do you want to talk a little bit about that situation? What happened? Personally, in that situation, you have to pull the trigger. It's very easy for me to sit here and say, why didn't you do it? Well, I'm sure there's a reason why. So,
sure, absolutely. What happened, basically, just maybe in the way of background,
be helpful.
There's only been one other storm where we've actually, it was the 2008 storm where we sought out outside help. So with that as a context, and we had gotten four crews at that time. When the storm hit this time, we knew we were dealing with something even by Sunday night without having a full assessment that was significantly greater than anything we'd dealt with in the past. So we authorized, and I'll say I authorized, after talking to my operations staff, eight crews for MAMA. So we had requested 8. I believe the timing was on the Monday morning MAMA call. An offer came for 16 crews. Our representative for MAMA attempted to make contact with myself and 2 of our managers. We were on a conference call with our senior management reporting on the status of the storm as that individual stated he had a couple of minutes to make a decision. Since we'd only authorized eight, he rejected the resources.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, 3 days later, by the end of the day Monday, we had increased our request to 16, and then 3 days after that, we got those crews back into our territory as additional resources. So we lost 3 days with those crews. Absolutely an issue from an internal communications perspective that we've already addressed with respect to that manager's participation in MOM and what his authorization will be going forward.
Thank you. One last question. We've heard, again, anecdotally, you know, elected officials in affected areas kind of making, we'll say, calls on emergency shutoffs. And obviously, standard operating procedure to when you're in flooded areas. Can I get every one of you to kind of give us your assessment on, you know, I use Mayor Nutter, who was very aggressive in a good way, but other cities and communities weren't as aggressive. There was kind of a disconnect back with Pima. We're hearing as a public utility commission a lot of small business people who wanted to get power restored who, you know, because of actions taken by elected officials were kind of they were hindered, and it created a little bit of heartburn in their business operation. But did anybody want to comment on that? Here's an example of where there could be greater coordination between local elected officials, Pima, the Public Utility Commission. Thoughts, observations?
I'll speak a little. During the hurricane itself, we did not experience much of the flooding, pulling meter situation. But in the week that the tropical storm Lee, we had a lot of those issues in Wilkes-Barre, Bloomsburg, Harrisburg. So if your question is about what is our normal process,
yes.
So we wouldn't generally go pull meters on our own, you know, in anticipation. We would be working with the local emergency management association. So those communications happen probably one of three ways. In the case of the tropical storm Lee, like in Harrisburg, for example, we had our local storm center here in Harrisburg working directly with the emergency management organization and the mayor's office. So the line of communication was direct. So when the EMA identified an area that was approaching flooding, we sent our teams in there and pulled meters. So that's how that communication happened. 911 centers within the last year, we have set up actually an online request where they can get to us online and it goes right to the top of the queue, or they have direct line into our dispatch. So they can call us directly, go online, or in the case of this last one in beginning of September for us, we actually had direct communication with our local office and the EMAs, Wilkes-Barre, Bloomsburg, and Harrisburg. That's what we had.
Lastly, Terry, thank you for your participation here. And one recommendation I would like to see through your organization, which I view as really the go-to organization for this industry, is really encourage the Energy Association to put together some type of committee to kind of continue this dialogue, because we know whether it's climate change, I don't know what's going on out there with snowstorms, earthquakes, but I would love to see your organization continue to bring everybody together from these lessons learned. I'm sure you're looking at that. I know at a national level you have the Edison Electric Institute, but really pulling those best practices into Pennsylvania. And I commend every one of you. You're all different. We've heard that. The topography of your service territories, there's not one of us that wasn't impacted as a commissioner, so we feel your pain because I know I was out for a day or two. But so, Terry, I just, you know, it's just food for thought. That, you know, we don't want to just say, okay, this is over and it might happen 5 years down the road and we're better prepared. I think this is one of these events, these clash events, that requires us to be more steadfast and diligent in kind of, you know, looking at best practices to bring to this industry. Your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's a great and very appropriate comment, Chairman. One of the things, is, as you know, I've emphasized about our association is we have an advocacy role on behalf of the industry, and we do that. But that isn't all we do. We do help the companies share information on best practices. We do have committees that have conferences every year, operational committees on both the electric and the gas side. I think this is an excellent subject to bring up for those committees and for those conferences to focus on the lessons learned here from these storms, and you know make sure that we really do fully pursue this, what we can all learn from each other and do better. So I think it's a great idea, Chairman.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Chairman. Each of you had a significant part of your presentation that was committed to the topic of communication, and I want to focus on that. There seem to be a couple of facets to this. The one, I guess, I would describe as maybe a technology aspect, where several of you indicated that there were glitches in the technology side of your systems, that they were overloaded, overwhelmed, software issues. It seems to me that those are probably ones that are solvable relatively easily. So that's one area that maybe we could get some comment on. The other is, and I'm reminded, I don't remember, I think it was John about the Facebook updates. I can't remember which one of you talked about Facebook updates. I'm reminded to go home and friend my utility company to make sure that they're part of my Facebook network. But my point with that is that the social network side of this, so maybe a different look, a different piece of the technology component, and that is several of you have talked of using the social network sites, Facebook, Twitter, and others. And I'd just be curious, those of you who are not using those social media pieces, whether that is one of the lessons learned, and would you expect to go back and make the argument that those are necessary tools going forward? The other piece, and I would just mention this quickly, and that is I wanted to just publicly commend the chairman, who in the midst of this event on two occasions was able to, in the spirit of communication, was able to convene conference calls with each of your CEOs and provided what I thought was valuable information. So I want to commend each of the companies and your chief executive officers for making themselves available to the commissioners in providing us critical system updates. I believe that was Sunday and on a Wednesday. So that was extremely helpful in the spirit of communication on this end. But again, back to the technology pieces, and just curious if any of you may have some comments on that piece.
I think I can comment a bit on the technology, and in particular the social media. Mentioned in our presentation sort of the constant pull and tug between the speed of information and the accuracy of information. It is critical that we provide accurate information. But what we're finding more and more because of social networking is that the importance seems to be more on the speed of information, and people are more adapt to say, all right, well, I know I'm getting it so quick that it may not be 100% accurate. I think we as a utility need to adapt to that a bit. I know that our utility, First Energy, is looking into, in particular, Twitter, and trying to get Twitter accounts and trying to get people associated with Twitter. I'll tell you from an operational standpoint, it scares us a little bit because we're going to have somebody in the room sitting next to us potentially Twittering what we're saying. We don't want in a storm to stifle the type of discussion we're having here, which is good, open, and honest discussion, because we're worried about somebody typing on Twitter. But I think at the same time, we're going to have to recognize that's a technology tool that we have to embrace, and somehow we're going to have to find that happy medium.
Just two brief comments. One is, as a company that was using Facebook, it was very interesting to read those individual comments coming back, certainly much more than you might see in a brief note from a call center rep, you know, to have somebody put a paragraph and post it and talk about, you know, they're losing their food or having problems with their generator, and they're you know, not being able to access water because their water pump is out of power. That's all very valuable, and it is a communication tool. It was surprising to me, you know, with power out, that there are that many customers out there that are finding ways to access electronic media. So clearly something that we're working on expanding. However, the low-tech side with the face-to-face customer meeting was every bit as important, perhaps if not more, the fact of being face-to-face with customers who, frankly, were not happy with us, you know, left some indelible messages in my mind that, you know, that clearly is affecting our path going forward.
Let me shift in my second question on the topic of restoration, and correct me if I'm wrong in this number, but I believe that all of you have suggested that restoration to 94% of your customers or better within 72 hours. Am I correct on that number? Maybe the question of the hour is, so the other 6%, and what is it that we can, as a commission, communicate in terms of those 6% of customers who are on the end of that restoration process going forward? Is there a message that we feel we can do better as a result of these conversations? Just curious of any input from that 6% of the customer base. And again, I would commend all of you. I think that you know, that looking at that visual is very impressive, and realizing that curve drops very, very quickly. And we're talking about a fairly small percentage, but it is it's fairly large in terms of numbers of customers that were out for, in some cases, 10 days. And that's a pretty significant pressure point, I'm sure, for all of you, as it is for us. But you know, so what would be the 15-second soundbite on that piece?
I guess if I could lead off, those customers are out for that long because their system has sustained the most damage. And obviously you saw through all the presentations today, it focuses on communication. And I think if we can get more information in those customers' hands as to the exact amount of damage done to their system as a whole that impact them. In our case, the customers that were out, still out in day four, day five, were customers where you had six poles cut in half, transformers leaking, and it was just devastation. And as a result, it wasn't as simple as a wire splice. So I don't necessarily know if there's anything that we can do, pardon me, to restore them quicker. You know, what we talk about in our war room during a storm is this is sort of when the real work starts. I think it's more in the line of communicating to them so that they understand what we're faced with.
I agree with those comments, and it's, I think, a little bit of awareness and education. In addition to the, at the end, I've got six poles that I have to work on to restore one customer. It's I think we all refer to the same term, a nested outage. So the whole neighborhood was restored. We did the repair down the street. My neighbor came on, and that service wire from the transformer to my house is not. So we've had the crew in the area. They restored the 50 customers, and they went on to somewhere else. And it could be a while before I can get a crew to come back to put up that last service wire. So I think the large amount of damage for a little bit of customers, that's at the end, and those nested outages. So those are the challenges that we deal with.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you. First off, I didn't have any opening comments because I think by the time it got around to me, everything that needed to be said had been said, and I do hate being redundant. But what hasn't been said here today, at least so far, is thank you very much for a job well done. I did track the restoration counts on a daily basis, pretty much, if not more than daily. And I guess I also have an appreciation for what it was requiring to get 96% of the customers back on. Was it 96? 94% of the customers back on, roughly within 72 hours. I've also taken the time to pretty much tour all of your territories, because when I came on the commission and I would hear an outage of 10 days, 8 days, 72 hours, I really needed to understand what the hell were you not doing that were not getting people back on. So I have been out in Penelec. I have been, of course, in PPL, all over PPL, UGI, and I know what the topography looks like. I know those extended single circuit, 20 miles long, 8 customers along that circuit, and what could happen if you take out 6 poles. So, again, I commend you for a job well done. But adding on to the vice chairman's theme about technology and lessons learned, I mean, it seems like the IVR systems of all of your companies really let you down. And I guess I have a general concern, having heard your comments today. It seems like maybe you're all might be using the same vendor, and that vendor is serving most of the country. So that kind of sounds like if we have a major catastrophic event, we can anticipate more incidents like what you've experienced. Does any of you want to comment to that, or am I maybe having a misunderstanding what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I'll take that. I think we referred to that. One of our vendors is, and I'm not sure everyone uses the same vendor, but I know they do service many of the utilities. I mean, I think that's, we take it very seriously. We take it very seriously with the vendor. I think to put it in perspective, that they were down for a couple of hours on Sunday. They serviced us throughout the rest of the that system ended up taking over about 500,000 calls throughout the duration of the event. It's just to kind of put it in perspective there. So that doesn't kind of excuse what occurred on that Sunday morning period, and certainly take that very seriously. But with them and with all of the technologies, so and I think most of the utilities you'll find are the same way. There's multiple redundancies built into that. So in our case, we have our own call center. We have the ability to use our sister utility to handle calls out in Chicago. We have our own internal IVR. We have the third-party vendor IVR. So we have multiple redundant systems. So, and I think that's what you'll find for both of us. Technology is great.
When it works.
But when it works, and you've just got to build some redundancies and some contingencies in there. And with our OMS systems, with our AMR systems, with our call-taking systems, I think what you'll find for most of us here is that we rely on them very heavily, but we also know that you've got to build some backup plans and contingencies so that when they do come down, you're able to have a contingency in place.
Well, I'll let you know that I will be asking Darren Gill to give me a report on how that's working and what was learned from that. Because, again, for each of the companies, I have IVR improvements, what's going on. So for each of you, I've heard that. With the PICO, sorry, Mike, but I'll go back to you. Could you speak to me a little bit? I remember during the course of the storm that the outage numbers would go down and then they go back up by several thousand. And I think that there were just some incidents of repeat outages. Could you speak to that? Because I think, that, again, that's a little concerning about restoring customers and then kind of raising the expectation that they think they're out of the storm, and then they're back out for 8, 10, 12 hours.
We did. We'd have a little bit of that, particularly in the first 2 days. As we started, as most of everyone here did, we started our restoration on Saturday evening. So we had a couple of occasions where, you know, as you got into Saturday and into Sunday, the winds, we experienced about 24 hours of the heavy winds from Saturday evening into Sunday evening. So, and we could, other than a couple of hours on late Saturday into Sunday morning where we grounded our crews, we were working through the whole time. So we were putting lines back up. We were putting substations back on while the winds continued to blow. So we experienced that probably for Monday and even a little bit Tuesday. The other, as you got into the smaller number of accounts later during the week, the other thing that we experienced was because of the amount of damage and the amount of tree damage, we'd have locations where you've had hanging tree limbs that didn't necessarily cause an outage, but if you did a lot of patrolling. Now, we were able to, part of our restoration process is we patrol all of the lines that we've had some outages, and we were able to avoid a lot of that with preventative measures. But as you got to those last couple of days in the storm, the tree limb that was hanging that may not have taken out the customers on Monday let loose on Wednesday, and we had a couple of those. That was something we dealt with during the week.
Anyone else want to speak to that question?
No, same thing. With the restoration efforts on Sunday, had direct reports from the crews who were up, you know, when the wind got down to 30 miles an hour or so, when they'd be up in the air, they were talking about section 7 spans down that were galloping, and come, so they'd make the repair, and then they'd see something come down down the road. So you had some of those latent outages that happened, and that the safety messages that I was talking about, hanging limbs was one of our key messages. We did have a pickup truck damaged with a limb that came down on it, and a number of our assessors, you know, identified areas and talked about areas that needed to be avoided because of those hanging limbs. But I'd say it was the hanging limbs caused the outages Tuesday, Wednesday, that, you know, that weren't there in the first few days.
I have here, and I'm not even sure it's really a question anymore, but it's directed to the First Energy companies. But for some reason I have here, seems like there was an issue with your storm management system. I'm not sure if that was Penelec or MedEd, but did I get something wrong there also?
I don't believe we had one small issue on Sunday morning with our outage management system. It was fixed fairly quickly. I would say by noon on Sunday, our system was robust and it was working properly. It did not slow us down.
And finally, so I guess MedEd didn't have any problems at all.
Same system.
finally, for UGI, I guess in by way of disclosure, I had expected that I would be making some rather pointed comments to UGI on the restoration effort, because by your own account, it could have been done better. But the amount of disclosure that you've come in and the candor that you've placed on the table in front of us, that by itself, to me, makes this session a very successful session, because it is really about trying to learn what went wrong and how can we do it better the next time. And so I want to take an individual commendation to UGI Electric for, again, a job well done, and I really do appreciate your candor here today.
Thank you.
Commissioner Whitmer.
Thank you. I'm pleased to see that UGI still relies on face-to-face customer outreach, because I'm not on Facebook. I'd have to ask my daughter to hook us up. A couple of comments and a couple of questions. And I think the overall comment and one that, you know, all of you have touched on and my colleagues have touched on, and I think it just really bears repeating, because there's so much we talk about, you know, the variety of ways to communicate and how rapidly then that communication spreads out, given, you know, the electronic, the fast electronic world that we're living in. The consistency of your messages has to, you know, be, I think, something that you work on. You know, neighbors, you know, will, since they know, you know, where I have, you know, spend my days, you know, will contact me and say, you know, this, you know, we got five or six different conflicting messages within, you know, a 24-hour or 12-hour period. And, you know, that's, I think, something that if you could just think about that as you move on, about how to be more consistent, even if it's not necessarily as specific a message, maybe a more general message, but a more consistent kind of a message. Something just to go away with. And I know that it is difficult when you're dealing, after all, we had a fifth at the, overall a fifth of our electric customers out. It is, I appreciate the magnitude of that problem. Wondering before the, just from an ongoing basis, how often do you drill your emergency management plans?
Well, I guess with our business, we have the fortune of practicing a lifetime very often.
Yeah.
But absent of that, we actually we drill specific storm drills. We do in the twice a year. We do in the winter. One because the winter storms have a different nature than the summer storms. So we'll do winter storm drills that'll focus on ice storms, snow, gas issues. We'll do summer storm drills that will focus on the more traditional thunderstorms. And then we'll periodically throughout the year, we'll do tabletop drills and specific drills that are more focused on isolated incidents, large underground events, large city events, things like that. And training will also occur throughout the year.
Actually, that's an area as a lesson learned. We actually talked to Dan and Darren about that at a recent meeting. We do annual drills currently, and it is something that we're looking at to see if there'd be some benefits to expanding the scope of those drills and perhaps doing them more than once a year.
It's tough to mention, but the size of our company, we're in these drills continuously. We do mutual assistance to other utilities, so we do visit that storm process on a regular basis, whether the storm's in Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Jersey. If we go through periods where we don't have regular storms, I would say a couple times a year, then we do the same thing. We would review our process, have drills. In addition to that, we do review our storm process on a yearly basis to see if there's changes that need to be made. Obviously, look at lessons learned continuously and make changes appropriately.
And I would imagine the scope of the individuals that you have involved in those drills follows sort of, your chain of command and everyone who might be touching the process from, your outreach coordinators to, your linemen and so forth. Also wondering, given it, looking at this particular event, given that we had, fairly good advance information about the track of the storm, would that have provided you an opportunity to take a look at your vegetation priority list or where some of your system vulnerabilities were and try to do some preventative action? And did you?
That's actually, when we talked about the couple days planning, that's one of the things that we talk about. So making sure the systems and configuration, if there's any corrective maintenance repairs that need to be done prior to the advantage of a storm like this that gives you a couple days notice is you have the opportunity to do those types of things.
Same for the First Energy companies. We look at anything that's out of that might be out of service at the time, and if we can, especially when you have this much notification, if the system's out of normal and you can get it back in a couple days before the storm hits, it definitely helps you out. So we do focus on that.
And in addition to the what they referred to as getting configuration back in for the flooding situations, particularly so anticipated, might lose a whole substation. So reviewed the switching plans to make sure if I lost that substation, do I have the steps written down that I can more quickly restore those? I would guess most of us do the same thing there too.
It's the days prior to the storm, really, from a system perspective, we were in very good shape from an operating field perspective. However, during the planning session, very similar to what was mentioned, assessed essentially planning how we were going to handle, making assumptions about switching and other processes that we would need to review as part of the restoration.
Yeah, just one last comment on that. I think a storm like this, usually the problems that we have from vegetation come outside the trimming zone, places that we usually don't touch. And I think that's very important. One of the things that we do is after we get all of our customers restored, we actually patrol our entire system to look for any other possible trees that could come down that are leaning that haven't yet caused outages.
That's good. And I think, you know, that's important for the public to understand as well, that in this kind of a situation, as you noted, a lot of the vegetation issues, trees, whatnot, were with, you know, beyond what you would normally use, you know, for your control. So. And then just one last thing. The cut and run program, you might want to think about changing the name. it doesn't sound real. and on that, and it does kind of relate. I understand, you know, why you what the intent is and what you're doing, and that it's efficient. But when you have people, you know, neighbors in an area, and they see you come in, and you know you're doing some work in a particular area, and you leave and it's not completely finished, there's a communications component I would assume that you're doing, but if you're not, that you would think about, you know, going back in and explaining what you were doing. But yeah, the cut and run name.
I can assure you there is no running involved with that.
No, sure.
But it does move the crews, and I would hope that the customers would understand. I mentioned part of that is restore. We do restore customers by doing that.
Sure,
and sometimes,
you know,
we pick up quite a few customers that way. So, but I understand the communication part of that is probably lacking.
I can assure you that at the face-to-face meeting, probably 80% of the people that were there were exactly in that position, and they were the toughest. You know, they were the most frustrated, and I don't know that I convinced them all that our process was the most effective, but I think they had a better understanding of it after we were done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to turn it back over to Darren. We're going to get into the public comment period, and if we have any presenters, come forward.
Prior to our public comment, I just wanted to check with all of you and also Jan Freeman, our executive director, if you had any other follow-up questions from the commissioners, or Jan, if you had any questions before we have probably about 5 minutes before the public session.
Thanks, Darren. Just a comment. It would appear from the presentations today that the size of the operation, your ability to call upon resources outside the region, I'm looking at PPL, First Energy, seem to make a difference. The smaller companies, I think, were more challenged. And I'm just wondering, going forward, will those be similar outcomes just because of the difference in size and access to a larger base of resources? Excuse me. Then secondly, on this issue of outages, I think we're really talking about the 6% of the folks who are out more than 3 days. And, you know, you talk about how you can approach that. And historically, just my own experience, there are a lot of folks that go out more frequently than others during times of storms. They tend to be at the end of the circuit. Is there any way to sort of rewire that process where you bring some of those people who are out all the time into a less frequent outage occurrence? So just a couple comments. The size of your operation going to be making a difference in terms of responding to outages moving forward in the future? And is there any way to approach that 6% who maybe not just in this situation but in other situations tend to be out and restored last at the end of the line?
Well, as the small entity, I guess I'll start off in responding to the size question. I think, you know, clearly the biggest size issue for us was the size of this storm and not having that historic perspective. Now that we have that perspective, you know, we've already initiated efforts to join, you know, an additional mutual aid group. You know, I think that's going to provide us additional resources right out of the gate. The other thing is, frankly, from a management of the existing mutual aid arrangement, we've already made changes to how that process is going to work going forward. So I think, all in all, you know, there are times when we wish we were three times our size, but I think given the steps that we've taken, I think we've addressed it very well. Certainly, for storms coming forward, you know, of this size or hopefully less significant storms, we'll be much better positioned to respond.
I can't think of a lot of things I can do for that hunting cabin, you know, that's 5 miles at the end of the line. But the some of the other customers that have the repeated outages maybe on the end of a circuit, the I'm a big believer in expanding the use of the distribution automation and the ability to. So I can't prevent the tree from coming over, but that 1,000-customer outage can be a 300-customer outage if I get the automation deployed. So some of those issues that we have in front of the state to try to get those regulations and the alternate rate making to help accelerate that, I think that's one measure that can help.
Okay, then as we approach the final section of our forum, what I'm going to do is, as I make my way over there, I'm going to allow Dan one final question of the panel.
Thanks, Darren. Kind of, you know, a lot of times I ask this when I'm talking to you guys or your folks on the phone, but while you're all here, what could we as state and not just PUC, but, you know, we have access to other resources through PEMA, our coordination with other state agencies. What can we do to help you better? What are some ideas that, some resources, some ideas that you guys have that we could help you better in the future? Because we're always, that's where I'm always looking is, you know, we have great communications back and forth. I know I could pick up that phone and get you guys on the phone and all that. But what, going forward, what are some items that we could help you as a state, as a whole, to help you guys out?
I would be remiss if I didn't say I think what I really appreciate is the help and support that we get already. So I think that the spirit of collaboration in terms of sharing the best practices, working in a very constructive manner, I think one of the reasons why we've done well is because of that. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. I think some opportunity, and I think we mentioned in ours, we have a very easy time in dealing with the PUC and PEMA in the state of Pennsylvania. We how to navigate some of the, with an event of this size, we're dealing with other states that we don't normally deal with. Possibly some help in the South to navigate with some of those other states would be helpful. We brought a lot of crews in from external to Pennsylvania, and the ability to do that quickly. In this event, we had a couple of days to plan, so even though we wrestled with it, we were able to get through it. Not every event gives us 2 or 3 days of planning times. It's, you get the smaller event where you've got to move very quickly and execute on that, so hours can make a difference.
And from our standpoint, I share his thoughts. You know, you guys have been great. One thing you don't do is pull any punches, so you let us know what's done well and what we need to improve on, and that helps us out. A session like this is very, very helpful to me. I've got a few notes to take back with me. Also, the sharing of information that you give us for other state agencies. I know after this storm, one of the biggest things we dealt with was road closures and our crews trying to find ways around those closed roads. And I know you brought up the use of the PennDOT Knowledge Center to us that we'll investigate in the future events. Hopefully that's active in the areas that we of all of our operating area, but if not, I'm sure it will be, and that's going to help out immensely. So just sharing that knowledge and that experience and the resources you have helps us out.
I'm very happy to hear that you're enthusiastic about improving and making better the crew movements, because Dan and I already talked about that we're already going to put that committee together and you're all going to be involved in it, so it's good that it's great that you brought that up. At this point, then, what I'll do is we'll open it up for public comment. I believe Robert Whalen is our...
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners, ladies and gentlemen. Commissioners, first of all, I would like to thank you for having this public forum and so that everybody can speak and be heard pertaining to storms and other things pertaining to the electric utility industry. I am Robert T. Whalen. My address is 203 Reservoir Road, Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, 15666. I am a resident of Pennsylvania, president of UWUA System Local 102, national executive board member of the Utility Workers Union of America, and I represent over 700 hardworking men and women that work for West Penn Power and First Energy affiliated companies in Pennsylvania. I'm also a customer of West Penn Power. I've been an employee of West Penn Power or one of its affiliate companies for 34 years, and worked as a lineman, meter technician, and a controls technician. During the restoration of service process related to the damage caused by Hurricane Irene, West Penn Power crews were dispatched to the Florida area before the storm made landfall. All of the crews that were dispatched to Florida were eventually redirected to a staging area in the Baltimore area for 6 days to await further assignment while Irene tracked northward. This example demonstrates the knee-jerk reactions of most utilities to request or send restoration of service crews to respond to potential trouble prior to any storm occurring. This is due to a limited amount of linemen that are available in the country. Any electric company that thinks it is going to be impacted by a storm attempts to get a commitment from other sources to provide linemen for restoration of service before another utility makes the same request. There have been times when West Penn Power linemen will drive through a storm to respond to trouble in another utility service area while the storm is on a potential course for the West Penn Power service area. This often leaves West Penn Power customers' lights off longer than necessary due to the limited resources left behind. After the West Penn Power crews were dispatched to trouble in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and other locations, they encountered many hours of wait time because they could not obtain proper clearances to work on downed wires and equipment. Many of the System Local 102 linemen reported wait times of 4 to 6 hours to get clearance to make repairs that only required 1 to 2 hours of repair time. After the crews made repairs to the facilities, they encountered another delay of 1 to 3 hours before receiving permission from the Regional Dispatch Operations Center to turn the electricity on. Many of the above crews were made up of 4 to 8 linemen who were parked in front of frustrated customers' homes. In many cases, the linemen and support personnel that are left at home will be forced to work overtime, even though there is no trouble in their area. When storm trouble occurs in these areas while West Penn Power linemen have been vacated, we typically see the few remaining linemen and other local personnel attempt to repair any trouble. In some cases, the company will bring in contractors or other outside utility company linemen to repair the trouble. This practice results in longer outages for West Penn Power customers due to the unfamiliarity of the local lines distribution system and work practices. In 1996, West Penn Power had approximately 370 linemen maintaining lines in Pennsylvania. Today, those numbers are significantly lower, with about approximately 250 linemen maintaining significantly more miles of lines, poles, and equipment. As a result, in some of the West Penn Power service centers, when a routine broken pole occurs during the evening, there are not enough linemen in the service center to complete scheduled work, such as new customer connections. There is no question that the recent economic downturn has resulted in fewer new customer connections over the last couple years. More important is the fact that during those high-growth years, West Penn Power did very little maintenance while adding equipment and lines to the infrastructure while continuing to reduce the workforce. In 1996, the company had most of the linemen working the daylight schedule performing maintenance. Today, there are lines personnel working their regularly scheduled shifts around the clock, working weekends, and manning trouble trucks during normal off hours. This type of scheduling is used by the company in an effort to respond to trouble at the expense of having a proper-sized workforce to do maintenance. The current staffing levels do not allow West Penn Power to perform the proper maintenance that should be done by the company. If proper maintenance was performed and correct construction standards were followed, the impact of storms like Hurricane Irene would be substantially less. West Penn Power linemen report that high-voltage primary wire breaks occur during nice days for no apparent reason other than it has been in the air too long. Substation electricians report frequent failures of transformer load tap changers, reclosers, circuit breakers, and other equipment due to lack of maintenance. When the above equipment fails, it results in unnecessary interruptions to customers and additional damage to utility equipment. West Penn Power linemen and other employees are working unprecedented amounts of overtime, and most of it is restoration of service work. The company claims most of the overtime is on a voluntary basis. However, in many cases, during a holiday or a potential threat of the storm, the company will instruct crews that if there are not enough volunteers to work, They will force linemen to fill various shifts in case a storm occurs. In most service centers, the crews will help one another to prevent a lineman from being forced to work if they have a family function. The company has a trouble truck that is manned from 3:30 p.m. to 7 a.m. every weekday and at all times during the weekend. There are many times that this truck is a forced work assignment over the weekend. The company also has the ability to put a second trouble truck in service for Saturday and Sunday. This truck, when used, is typically a forced work assignment for linemen. In two service centers, there have been many times when both trucks have been a mandatory work assignment where there are only four linemen in the service center. When this occurs, the linemen in those service centers are on a standby call status for 24 hours a day for 2 weeks and for 4 weekends of the month. When a lineman voluntarily accepts a call on Friday, they are being required to return Saturday and sometimes Sunday, even though no trouble exists. Linemen and other employees work in any kind of weather every day of the week to restore service to customers. The work they perform is dangerous, heavy manual labor that requires a sharp mental focus because there are no second chances in the electric business. West Penn Power will face greater challenges in 2013 due to the pending retirement of a large number of System Local 102 employees. This will create a shortage of mentors and teachers for the next generation of electric utility workers. It takes a minimum of 5 years to train anyone that is hired off the street to be a safe lines substation worker. Even if you hire a lineman from First Energy's lineman school, you still need a minimum of 3.5 years of training to have a safe worker. I respectfully request that the commission investigate the following. One, does West Penn Power have proper staffing in all field and support positions? Two, does West Penn Power have a current staffing plan to provide safe, reliable electricity to its customers now and in the future? Three, how many man hours is actually spent on lines and substation maintenance? Four, how many man hours are required to properly maintain lines and substation equipment? Five, do present West Penn Power field personnel work unsafe levels of overtime? Six, does West Penn Power track voluntary and forced overtime assignments? Seven, does West Penn Power have a plan to upgrade its infrastructure to prevent unnecessary customer interruptions and provide safe, reliable electricity? Eight, does West Penn Power experience any financial gain or loss by sending crews to work at other utilities? Nine, how many times has West Penn Power requested assistance from other utility companies or contractors that was not needed and was required to pay for their services? Ten, are there better construction standards to follow that would provide more reliable service to West Penn Power customers? In closing, I ask you to consider a state without electricity. There are no portable generators or batteries that can replace electricity in Pennsylvania homes or businesses for any reasonable amount of time. Electricity is a matter of national security, and its infrastructure should be maintained the same as any military defense system. From an economic standpoint, there is no business that can survive without it. When the lights go off, it costs Pennsylvania businesses revenues. The customers of West Penn Power deserve safe, reliable electricity that comes from well-maintained equipment. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And, you know, I'm not going to ask the panel to address that because I don't think this would be the time for that, but I will commit to you, Bob, and we talked beforehand, and I also spoke with Mike Welsh from the IEBW. Last year, I began a relationship to try to reach out to the IEBW and to the various electric workers in Pennsylvania to build a rapport with the commission so that we understand the concerns of the electrical workers. And what I'm going to commit to from my standpoint is I will be, as we discussed earlier, attempting very hard, almost certainly meeting with you as you requested in November out at your facilities, talking with your membership, taking the 10 points you brought under consideration. I know those are things that both our audits bureau has looked at, that both I have looked at from reliability and Dan looks at from an emergency response standpoint. But we will certainly take a fresh look at it based on your concerns today. And again, I've committed that I will attempt very hard to make sure we get together in November and follow up on your concerns. With that, are there any other comments from anybody in the audience? Any follow-up from any commissioners or from Dan on any comments or questions? If not, Vice Chairman, do you have any, or Commissioner Whitmer, do you have any closing comments or anything you want to close with?
No, Darren, I just want to quickly say again thank you to all of you that are here today, and commend you for the effort, for what you've done, not only in this particular storm event, but what you do 24/7, 365. So thank you very much for being here today.
And we are adjourned today.